What's my favorite song? Smile Jamaica by Chronix. Would you say you're an empath? In this last year, and I haven't really delved too much into empaths, but from what I understand, when you're an empath, it's like you interact with energy on a deeper level. And I kind of think, I don't know, I kind of think I have that effect sometimes where it's like I'll talk to somebody on the phone and they'll be feeling down and I'll just be talking to them. And it's like after I get off the phone, it's like I internalize what they're dealing with, which is really crazy. I don't know if there's any validity to it, but there's been a couple times where I've been in one mood and then I talk to somebody or I get around somebody and it's like I internalize what they're feeling, which is really crazy, because if that's what it means to be an empath, then I mean, I'm gonna need to be a lot more careful about how I'm interacting with people. Not to say you can't interact with people who aren't in great spaces, but I mean, like, I think you then have to kind of really take understanding yourself and your own energy seriously. You got to know how to interact with people and how to maintain stability within yourself. But I don't know, like, I haven't looked into it crazy, so I can't verify anything, but I definitely think I internalize a lot of what happens around me, for better and worse. What's the point of doing these lives? Honestly, man, like, sometimes we get on here and we talk and we have conversations. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's insightful, we answer questions. It's really just like it's developed into like just community where we just like get on here and we just talk and we answer questions and we have conversations. I don't know, it's kind of therapeutic, I would think, you know? And I imagine like it's a good way to use social media as well. So I don't know. All right, let's jump into some questions. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about what's going on with you. What's happening in your life? What are you curious about? What have you been thinking about? I'll try to help as best as I can. You know, I'll just give you my thoughts about them. What's happening? What's giving you hope right now? All right, I guess we will talk about me for a second then. What's giving me hope right now? I don't know. What's giving me hope right now, I think, is just kind of knowing that nothing is permanent, I should say. It's like today I was kind of meditating on the fact that, you know, there's a season for everything, right? So there's a season to feel great and there's a season to feel low and there's a season for prosperity. There's a season when things will fall apart. There's a season for chaos. There's a season for order. There's a season for everything. And within that, you kind of realize that nothing is permanent. And I think sometimes, like, when it's in regards to good things, we kind of hate that. Like, when we say nothing is permanent, like, oh, this relationship might not be permanent. My feelings might not be permanent. Like, I don't want to lose feeling great. But I don't know, it's kind of comforting for me as well. Like, when I'm in a low space or just a space like what I'm in right now, to kind of understand that no matter how low it gets, it's only a season that I'm going through right now. And at the end of this season, I'm going to come out a lot better than I came into it. So I don't know, it's just like sometimes I just have to look at the world around me when I can't find hope for myself within my life. And I look at the world and I'm like, well, there's winter and there's summer. And I look at trees and I see how a tree goes through all the seasons. You know, there's times when the tree is flourishing and it's green and it's great and it's healthy. And then there's winter has come where the tree is like has no leaves at all and it's practically dead, but it still holds on because it knows spring is coming. And I don't know, like, that kind of gives me hope within myself, because I see how, like, life, the world around us, like, replicates the life that we experience. So even when I can't find hope within myself, sometimes if I go outside and I look outside, I can see just wisdom all around me that kind of reassures me that whatever I'm dealing with is never permanent. And even more than that, it's always leading to my overall development, you know? Like, I have to constantly remind myself that life isn't here to be my enemy. Life isn't here to break me down. Life isn't here to make me feel terrible. Life happens for us and not to us. So when things don't work out in my way, or even when I'm having bad days, I understand that the good part about all of that is that it will always result in your greater good. You know, even if it doesn't feel like it right now, even if things don't feel great right now, life is always working for your betterment. And I think that's just a really reassuring truth to understand. How do you feel about black love? I mean, I'm with all of it, bro. What do you mean, how do I feel about black love? I'm a product of black love. No, man, I think black love is necessary, or even outside of relationships, the love of being black, I think, is necessary. I think that as a people, especially here in America, from what I've experienced, we don't really have a sense of identity. And for that reason, we find ourselves always feeling like misplaced or out of place, I should say. So I think it's very important for black people specifically to really understand and develop a love for blackness, for being who they are. And I mean, everybody deserves to feel like they feel loved or feel like they love themselves. But I think from what I've noticed here in America, like black people specifically have had things, just experiences that they have to walk into that make us feel like we're less than always. So I think it's an even harder fight to do that. So yeah, important. I'm a product of black love. I'm with black love. I'm pretty sure my wife is going to be black, you know, like I'm with all of it. So to whoever asked how to forget someone you love, to be honest, it's really like somebody you can never truly just forget them, and you just become less and less affected when they cross your mind. I think that's important. I don't think you should ever want to forget anybody that had a lasting impact on your life, for better or for worse, right? Like, even if you went through a toxic relationship, if that person had such a heavy effect on you, you shouldn't just be trying to wipe them from your memory, because otherwise you'll never grow from what caused you to be in that toxic relation to begin with. So it should be on your mind. Like, you should be using that entire scenario to better understand yourself and your place and your standards, and better understand love and relationships altogether, so you have a clearer and better idea of what a healthy love and a healthy relationship looks like for you, and even what a healthy relationship looks like for yourself, so you can better, like, you know, better create better standards for relationships and the relationships you engage yourself with. But I don't think we should be trying to forget anybody that had an impact on our life. You know, I think we should be trying to learn lessons from the experiences that we have. Should I feel guilty for losing feelings from my dude? No, I wouldn't say that, because feelings are inconsistent. We always say this, you know, feelings are never built to last. You know, emotions is in the word emotions, like they're constantly fluctuating and changing. That's how they were made to be. And that's why I think, like, a relationship shouldn't be based on feelings, because feelings come and they go. You might like somebody today, you might not like them tomorrow. You might be happy today, you might be sad tomorrow. You can't base a relationship on something that fluctuates so often. That's why I think relationships and love has to be a decision. You know, like, there's a difference between infatuation and love. Infatuation is feeling like, I feel passionate about you right now, I feel love for you right now, I feel good around you, but that's not enough to foundate a relationship. And when it comes to relationships, you have to really pay attention to the foundation that you're building your relationship on. Like, if you're building a relationship on feelings, like, you might get somewhere, but as soon as some kind of storm comes, some kind of conflict happens, you'll see how quickly and easily that relationship falls apart, because it was never built on the right foundation. Whereas when you do build it on the right foundation, which I consider a decision, like, you're deciding to love this person for better or worse, for good or bad. That's why vows are written the way they're written. It's building and securing and verbalizing that foundation. And once you build it on a solid foundation, storms will come and conflicts will come, but the relationship won't have to fall apart because of it, because you both have a mutual understanding that, hey, this is a decision that we've made. It's just like when you have a job, you know, like, you might not love your job every day, you might not even like your job, but you decide to go to your job every single day because you understand the commitment that you've made. You know, it's the same thing with relationships. Like, some days you're going to come in to your relationship and it's going to be great, it's going to be smooth, it's going to be easy. Some days you're going to come in, it's going to be turbulent, but you understand the commitment that you've made, so you work through it nonetheless. How do I become more spiritual? Listen to yourself. Because it's like there's two worlds, right? There's a world that exists outside of us, and there's an entire world that exists within our minds. But I think we get so caught up in the world outside of us, we never take the time to explore the world within ourselves. And that's important, because once you start to delve into that world, when you delve into the world within yourself, it changes your entire perspective and how you function in the world that is outside of you. So I think that's where you know, spirituality can be important. And then there's different facets of it. There's different aspects of it. You know, like, praying is really important. Praying, not just speaking to speak, but praying and knowing, like, believing that you are being heard. It changes your entire way of speaking when you know you're being heard. In the same way, like, you can sit in your room and just talk to yourself all day, but you speak differently when you're talking to somebody that's right in front of you. I think when you pray, you have to keep in mind that you are being heard. And I don't know, man, just be still for a second. Yeah. You say these lives are good for social media. You sure that's the same for Tory Lanez quarantine radio? Well, different people are different people, man. Different people have different interests. Different people use social media for different reasons. I think that, like, you know, it's not my place to say anything or judge anybody else for how they choose to use this tool. All I'm saying is what we got going on right here is what we got going on right here. We come in here, we chilling, we talking, we answer questions, you know, we have a good time. Some people like that other thing, you know, but I don't know. I think we spend so much time focused on, like, you know, whenever we find truth for ourselves, and even me, I struggle with this too. Once I find a truth for myself, like, I just said, hey, this is good. And I'm like, is this good? And I start comparing it to everything else in the world. I think that we need to take truth and hold on to it for ourselves instead of trying to take it and, for lack of a better term, judge others. Like, embody the truth that you know instead of trying to judge the world by the truth that you know. You know, because, like, judging will never get you anywhere at all. I think that before anything at all, it's all about embodying. It's all about you finding a way to be comfortable in your own world, in your own universe, in your own being, as your own person. And that will reflect in everything that you do. The way you talk to people, the way you go around people, the way you operate in society, like, the light that you find within yourself will always shine through with every experience you have outside. Say all that to say, yeah, we over here minding our business, just doing our thing, you know, just working on ourselves, growing, you know. Where do I start exploring my mind? For me, the first thing that comes to mind is engaging in inner dialogue. So, for instance, if something happens and you get angry, you know, instead of just existing within that anger, question yourself, like, why am I angry? Why does that make me feel angry? And then actually answer, you know, try to figure out what's actually going on in your mind instead of just existing and being a victim of your feelings and your thoughts and emotions. Question them and figure out really what's going on behind the scenes in your mind, you know, because, like, I think we exist in our conscious mind so often. That's what we identify with. And we tend to forget that there's an entire subconscious mind that is literally like an entire iceberg underwater. That's really all of who you are. It's kind of like using a computer, like, we only see what's on the surface. We press this button and this happens. We don't understand all the mechanics that cause that to happen behind the scenes. It's the same thing with our minds. Like, we usually identify and exist within what's happening on the surface, and we hardly take the time to question or consider or delve into what's actually happening behind the scenes. And I think once you start to do that, then you can start to actually make a change within yourself, you know, because you better understand who you are and why you are the way you are. You're not just judging yourself and telling yourself that you need to be better or you need to make change. You're not always criticizing or scrutinizing yourself. You're actually taking the time to understand yourself to then make that change. Do you think that we don't tell God what we're enough for in our prayers? I don't know what that means. Were you trying to say, like, thankful for in our prayers? Like, we don't tell God what we're thankful for in our prayers? Tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to go off on a tangent on that. I don't know. I think when it comes to praying, like, the biggest key to praying is just being honest. And that's it. It's, like, the simplest thing. And being honest is really the answer to some of life's biggest questions. You know, people always ask, like, how do I find myself? Be honest. How do I pray? Be honest. You know, how do I be myself around people? Be honest. That's all you have to do, because once you're honest, then you open yourself to growing and changing, and you don't judge yourself because you understand that you're always being and presenting 100% of who you are right now. And you don't have to love every part of who you are right now, but so long as you're honest about it, then the changes can actually start to happen. You can actually start growing, you know, and developing. But you have to start with being honest. Be honest about your feelings. Don't laugh at something if you don't think it's funny. Your laughter is a gift that you get to offer the world or another person. Offer it honestly. You know, when you're speaking to people, be honest. You know, it's I don't know. I found that, like, life is not as complex as we make it. And you know, like, you'll meet these old people who always have these really simple parables. These really simple parables. Like, how I'm just telling you right now, be honest. And you're, like, probably thinking, like, no, like, it's more complicated than that because I have anxiety and I have this and I have this. It's like, no, it's not that complicated. You're just allowing your mind to convince you of that. But really, like, if you just sit for a second and think about it, like, the biggest truths in life are very simple. And when you experience life enough and you start to get some, you know, experience under your belt, you start to find that the answers that you've been searching for have always been in front of you. We just tend to overcomplicate what is so very simple. But it's something we all struggle with, so don't feel bad about it. But, you know, we take it a day at a time, but be honest. What's your take on people who are in love with the idea of love and unknowingly think they are in love? I think it's falling in love with the version you create of somebody in your head rather than the person themselves. Okay, so that's what you mean by, like, being in love with the idea of a person or the idea of love. Okay, well, that's something I think we all fall into. It's like sometimes we engage with somebody for the potential of what we think they could be, instead of engaging with the reality of what they are. So what you'll find is this person is throwing up mad red flags, but you're so tunnel visioned on what you see this possibly being that you basically sacrifice the truth within yourself and you let yourself get harmed because you're tunnel visioning your way to an idea. That can be very unhealthy. You have to really, like, listen to people. Like, really listen to people, because people will show you and tell you the truth about how they feel about you. But the problem is that we often don't listen to people. We don't observe their actions to really understand how they're treating us. We're often focused on what's in our heads, you know? So we flip around toxic behavior into being like, oh, well, no, it's just a bad day for them, or they're just dealing with this right now. It's like, no, no, no. Listen to people. People will show you exactly how they feel about you. And you have to take that for what it is. For your betterment, I think, and that's a major distinction to make. I think sometimes we get caught in a loop where we care so much about other people that we don't care enough about ourselves. So we find ourselves in situations where we're willing to let ourselves get beat up. We're willing to let ourselves get torn down and broken down for the sake of the potential love that we might find from another person. Basically, we're more concerned with somebody else's well-being than our own. And I think that's an important change that we need to make, because when you're concerned with your own well-being, then you're looking out for yourself first in a non-selfish way. You're saying to yourself that, hey, I am only going to allow myself to be in situations that are productive and beneficial and healthy for me. And when you start to see that you are in a situation where you're being disrespected or hurted or just, like, just not being respected, you literally will not allow that for yourself. Because you are looking out for your own well-being. You will not allow yourself to be broken down or beaten up or disrespected by another person. What do you think about evil for the greater good? One perspective is the death penalty frees spaces for prisoners, meaning less nature is destroyed when building prisons. Well, first of all, there's, like, a lot of evil and not much good in that scenario, in my opinion. Because, one, I don't think any human being should have control over the life of another human being. I don't think that, like, this is life, you know, like, you didn't create that person's life. I don't think you have the right to end it, despite how terrible they can be. I honestly believe that people, like, it's much worse to be locked up than to die, you know? Like, if you really want to punish somebody, lock them up, put them in a box somewhere, and let them think about all that they've done for a couple years, you know? But, like, I don't think we should have the power to end a life that we didn't start. Or end of life, period. Because that's bigger than us. That's way over our pedigree. And then in regards to prisons, it's like, why are we building more prisons? Why aren't we creating more institutions to better rehabilitate people so that they can exist in society again as better human beings? Prisons shouldn't be like a holding box to hold bad people. Prison should be a place where you go and you're rehabilitated, and it can help you to learn your lesson and open your perspective to be a better human being so you can go back out into society and function properly, you know? But the whole prison system is just messed up now, so. Do you think that people should be having sex before marriage and stuff like that? Well, I mean, ultimately, as of right now, I can only speak for myself, really. For me, I don't think I want to have any more sex before marriage. at first I thought I was just gonna, like, I started being celibate next last, like, 7 months ago in August, and I thought I was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna be celibate until I, you know, meet somebody or, you know, whatever. 5 months later, I'm like, dang, like, well, you know, like, as life goes on and you start to, like, adapt to living in this way, I don't know, like, now I kind of really see sex in an entirely different way, so I can better understand why I personally, because of my life experiences, probably won't end up having sex until marriage, or at least until I meet the person that I know I'm gonna get married to. Which at that point, if I know I'm gonna marry them, I might as well just wait till we get married. But I don't know. I definitely don't think that sex should be looked at as casually as it is now. I think our generation is extremely sexualized, to the point where we've, like, casualized sex. You know, like, we just treat sex as just like another, it's like going outside and playing ball, you know, it's something you do to enjoy yourself. And I think it's so much deeper than that. You know, you're literally, I think it's one of the most intimate spaces that you can exist in with another person. You're literally opening yourself entirely to another human being on multiple levels, physical, emotional, spiritual. Like, I don't think that we should be treating it as casually as we do. So yeah, I don't know, man. Even if you do decide, like, you're still having sex, I think you should at least be very, very deliberate and conscious about the people that you're, or the person that you're engaging with in that way. What if your girlfriend is super adamant about it? What, sex? Then if my girlfriend is adamant about it, first of all, if my girlfriend can't respect my decision to not have sex, then she doesn't need to be my girlfriend. Because now you're disrespecting, like, me and my values, and you don't have respect for who I am and what I stand for. So I don't even want to be with you anyways. And it's the same thing for guys, because I think that situation is more prominent with men. It's like, women often feel like, you know, in order for this guy to stay with me or remain with me or feel intimate with me, I have to, you know, please him and have sex. And it's like, no, like, men often, and even me often get away with the excuse of, like, this is how I interact and this is how I love, you know, I like being physical, I like having sex, that's how I, and it's like, no, bro, like, you just haven't done enough work within yourself to discover the deeper facets of love. You know, we've been taking love at its surface level for, I think, a very long time. And until you really peel that back, then you'll never, it'll be very hard for you to understand how much deeper love can actually go. Pretty sure the guy I was dating fell out with me because I was adamant about being celibate. And that's completely fine. You know, that's cool. Like, I think we have to stop looking at things that don't work out as our losses, and actually look at them as our progress, as our development. Because if you fall out with somebody because of something that you would not compromise on, then that person is removing themselves from the situation and by default leading you towards the person you're actually meant to be with. Because the person you're actually meant to be with will not only respect the values that you stand for, but will actually encourage the values that you stand for. They will actually fit like a glove. Like, oh, you do that too? You think this way too? Bro, I've been looking for somebody who thought about it like that my whole life. I'm so glad I met you. That's the kind of experience it'll be like. Which, of course, means engaging patience. You know, you're gonna have to, like, you're not gonna run into your soulmate casually. You know, you're not gonna run into the person you're meant to be with just at Burger King tomorrow. Like, it's going to mean, I think, actually engaging patience and really securing and understanding your own core values to better understand who you are as a person. And I think once you find that security within yourself, and you won't compromise for it, and you know the respect that you not only have for yourself, but you require from another person, that's when you're in that mental space. I think that's when you'll be introduced to somebody, you know, that you're meant to be with, because you've secured yourself. You've secured your understanding of who you are and what you stand for, what you're about and where you're going, so that nobody's going to come into your life and deter you from the path that you're meant to walk in this life. You know, that's when you'll be introduced to a person. That's when they'll come along and help you along the path that you've already defined for yourself. How did you get here? All this realization about love, life, and fulfillment. Well, I think there's two parts to it, right? I think one, it's just like, well, it's really a lot to it. It's not just, yeah. You want a bed? All right, mm-hmm. I'll see you tomorrow. Yeah, I'll put it on when I'm done.
Thanks.
All right, see you tomorrow.
And I can tell you're doing live.
Okay, I am. So yeah, man, I think it's a bunch of different things, but I would say just self-introspection, self-reflection, not always feeling like I need to put blame on things that are outside of me, and really looking at the part that I play in every instance in my life, because it gets to a point where it's like, if your life is not doing well or you're not feeling good about life, you don't feel comfortable, after blaming the world and blaming people, blaming emotions, blaming how people treat you, blaming your parents, after you blame everything outside of you and you realize that it never makes a change, you realize the only place left to look is at yourself, because you realize that you can't change people, you can't change the world, you can't change how people talk to you, but you can only change your perspective, you can only change how you respond, you can only change your being. And I think once you make that realization, you start to do the work within yourself, you start to look at yourself as something to develop and grow. So yeah, man, I think all of those things has kind of added up to me being this accumulation of like my entire life experience. Yep. Are you going to bed? Okay. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
All right, love you.
Love you too.
How are you dealing with loneliness? I don't know. I think I keep myself engaged with myself. Like, I try to find habits for me to keep, to keep my mind engaged. I think, like, I tend to start to feel lonely when I let my mind wander off, you know, for too long. You know, like if I'm online all day, it's like I paint a poor picture for myself. That's not always necessarily true. Like, I'll tell myself that I'm lonely, but I'm not actually lonely, because last week I was just talking to my friend and I was so glad that I was alive and I could be around people and experience like this. But it's just in this moment, I think our minds, if we let them go for too long, or if we indulge them too deeply in the wrong way, our minds tend to paint a morbid reality for us, which is not accurate, but because it's our minds, we believe it. So I don't know, like, my loneliness comes in phases, but I can now identify or acknowledge the fact that because I feel lonely doesn't mean that I am, you know? And sometimes it's something as simple as calling somebody. Like, if I feel myself getting into that hole, I'll pick up my phone and I'll call somebody. And it doesn't have to be somebody I've been talking to. It can be somebody I haven't talked to in a while. Somebody who I probably don't expect to want to hear from me right now, but I call them anyways, and it usually ends up being something very insane. I think, or really good, I should say, insane in regards to being good. But I don't know, man, like it's taking action, and it's something I'm trying to get better at, is taking action when I see myself slipping into spaces that I know aren't healthy for me. Taking action means going outside. It means picking up the book I've been avoiding reading. You know, it means, you know, stopping the things or the habits that usually bring me back into the holes that I don't want to be, like social media. Like, when I notice that I'm starting to feel bad, delete the app right there. Just delete it. Don't question it. Don't convince yourself that you should or shouldn't. Just get off and delete it. Take it off your phone and then force yourself. I'm going to go outside. I'm going to bring this book with me. I'm going to listen to a song. I'm going to call somebody. It's all about taking action, because some really great advice my uncle gave me, it was in regards to anxiety, but I think we can apply it to much larger instances, is that the only mistake you can make with anxiety is allowing it to cripple you. The best way to get out of anxiety is to make a decision, because normally when it comes to anxiety, we get caught between too many choices in our head. And the best thing you can do is just make a decision, you know, because it only has one of two results. When you make a choice and you move forward, it will only have one of two results. Either you'll make the right decision and you'll celebrate now because you made the right one and you feel better and you see the immediate responses, or you make the wrong decision and you learn from it because it becomes a lesson and then you celebrate later. But either way, you're going to celebrate. Either way, it's going to work out to your betterment. So, and in life, you should always just make a decision. The worst thing you can do, or the only mistake you can make, is allowing life to cripple you and keep you stagnant and keep you still. Favorite book in the Bible? I don't have Isaiah, actually. I'm lying. My favorite book in the Bible is Isaiah. Right now, at least. Like, every time I read Isaiah, it's just wow. You know, it's just wow. The Bible is, man, like, we could sit here and talk about the Bible forever. It's such a great, phenomenal book. It's the best book in the history of the world. We're just going to put it out there. There's no book in this world that is better than the Bible, you know? Like, just of how it's written, how it's structured, the truths that... Oh, my goodness, bro. Like, it's like you never... It's one of those books where it's like one lifetime is not enough to understand the Bible. You know, and it's crazy because it's like, bro, like people don't really take time to really understand and see how sophisticated of a book it is. Like, yo, you could live 90 years on this earth and maybe understand 20% of the Bible. You know, I don't think there's any other book that has that kind of depth or longevity in it. What is your goal or purpose, so to say, in life right now? Well, when I think about purpose, I think about what it is that we're meant to do here on earth, right? So it's like every living thing on earth is created with a purpose, you know? But your purpose, I think, is more aligned with what you are meant to do for earth and life and existence in itself, more than what you want or desire. So for instance, trees produce fruit, but they don't eat fruit. Water, rivers produce water, but they never bathe or cleanse themselves, you know? Flowers provide oxygen, but they never use it. They don't need it. So you see, all of these things that are living have a purpose, you know? But their purpose oftentimes doesn't benefit them at all, you know? So when you look at that, when you look at trees making fruit, when you look at rivers providing water, when you look at flowers providing oxygen, then you have to question, like, well, what is man supposed to do? Because as of right now, man is only concerned with what we can do for our own betterment. What is it that we're here to do for the betterment of existence in itself without any kind of like incentive to better or help ourselves? And that's when I think you sort of tap into what purpose really is, because you remove your own desires and your own fulfillment from it. And you just think like, what am I meant to do? What am I equipped to do that can benefit the world or benefit life or benefit people? And purpose doesn't always mean you have to be like a person in a high place with massive influence over millions of people. I think purpose is more aligned with like the way you go about living your life, you know, the things that you do, the way you treat people, the way you speak to people. What do you bring to people's lives when you encounter them? Are you bringing light to their lives? Are you bringing nothing to their lives? Or even worse, are you bringing negative energy to their lives? Like, how are you existing with your fellow, you know, how are you existing with existence, pretty much? Because it's not just people. It's how are you treating the earth? How are you treating your environment? How are you treating yourself? Like, yeah, purpose is major.